I'm Frank Vaughn. It is February 25th, 2026. I'll try to be more concise today for those of you who don't like 40-minute videos. We'll see how successful I am. And in that vein, rather than stitching together a bunch of clips from the State of the Union, if you haven't already watched it, you're probably not going to. I'll give you some Cole's notes because I watched the whole thing. The first thing and primary thing was calling Venezuela, the U.S. president, from the highest, most important speech, the biggest platform the nation has on a yearly basis, calling Venezuela a friend and ally and highlighting the 80 million barrels of oil that they have sold into the U.S. at a much higher price than they'd be used to getting for their oil. Friend and ally. Kind of flying under the radar, but that's a pretty huge statement from a U.S. president. Kind of flips the script on the Caribbean, and I would remind everybody that this wasn't a regime change operation. Maduro was taken out. Maduro also knows where all the bodies are buried. He has a lot of intelligence that he can share with the United States in terms of how the United States has been undermined by both China and Europe and the City of London, which is a story for another day. Friend and ally. He also was complimentary towards Canada. He didn't say anything directly inflammatory about Canada. Didn't even really pay us much attention. The only time he talked about us was when he highlighted that the U.S. men's and women's team in hockey trounced us. But he didn't say it like that. He said, a very skilled team. He paid high compliments to our Canadian athletes that were playing the hockey game. For those of you who are very concerned about hockey, we're going to talk about that too a little bit later. He chose to recognize a homeschool mom. I thought that was pretty powerful too. And recognized her as a hardworking mom with a husband who's hardworking and they homeschool. But actually putting a homeschooler on the highest stage of the land sends a really powerful message. And I know people have to use the public school system. I understand. I say on this channel that homeschooling is superior because it is. If you can do it, it's superior. Instead of sharing a classroom, instead of your child having to be exposed to the lowest common denominator in the student pool, or be exposed to the gender nonsense and all the politicization that comes with public school, being shoved in a room with 35 other kids competing for teachers' attention, who's never going to care about your kid as much as you are. Instead, there's all kinds of vast curriculum. There's all sorts of learning that they can do, and they have their own dedicated tutor. Who better than a parent? It's fantastic, but you'd never see that happen in Canada. You'll never see it happen in most areas of Europe. I thought that was really cool. He also called out Somali Minnesota and got heckled by a Somali in there and called them Somali pirates. And that's probably the most clickbaity clip. But wouldn't you just love to have a Canadian leader that didn't mince words or used more sophisticated language, if you like? It's the truth. Somali pirates is a colloquial, but it's the truth. Raiding the U.S. taxpayer, people who've never paid in, and then shipping that money overseas in one of the biggest fraud rings that's ever been uncovered in U.S. history. And it's nice to see the administration going after that fraud. And I don't know if we'll get to it, but I don't know if it's on my list. It doesn't matter. We're going to go through the list. Tells the truth about trucking illegals and how they can't read signs. So the American problem is different from the Canadian problem because we just bring people in en masse who can't read or speak English, and then we put them in front of a 10, 15, 20, 30-ton truck, and we send them barreling down the highway, and we now have a casualty rate on our roads similar to a war zone. That's Canada's problem. Sing trucking is the equivalent of what he's talking about, and it's an issue for them as well, especially Canadian truckers across the border, so-called Canadian truckers going into the United States, causing damage. We got to get into that in depth later, but it's really cool to hear somebody on the highest stage of their nation talk about these things. Express that America is for Americans, not illegals, and there was a very long standing ovation while he swept his hand at the Democrats sitting on their butts, singling them out. And the only time they really got up was to applaud the U.S. Olympic team. There was a lot of good news in the State of the Union if you're an American. The lowest violent crime rate in 150 years, illegals flowing out of the country, I mean, there were some things, especially the violent crime, that should have brought even the Democrats to their feet or even triggered some applause. But of course, they just sat there looking terrible, like bumps on a log. All they can do is outrage. And as much as the polling, we should talk about that a little bit, the reason the polling might be soft. And when I talk about polling, I'm not talking about mainstream polling. I'm talking about Rasmussen and the reliable pollsters are showing the Republicans soft. At this point, heading into the midterms, there's still time to turn it around if it needs to be turned around. Because the United States, if it passes the SAVE Act, where you have voter ID and you have to have proof of citizenship, common sense stuff, man. Like, it would be stronger voter identification than Canada has now. If you get that done, make it impossible for illegals to vote, kick out the illegals and the fraud, then it could very well be that Rasmussen and other pollsters don't know how to poll a proper electorate because they haven't done it. They've had to tool their polls all of these years to elections that are tainted by massive fraud. And if you don't believe there's fraud, I don't even care anymore. There's massive fraud in the United States, or there was. They're trying to fix it. One of the shortcomings of Trump 1, Trump 45, was there wasn't enough attention in it. And I know there was a ton of things that were keeping the administration distracted at that point. But there wasn't enough attention at fixing the electoral system. And you've seen what happened in 2020. And again, if you don't believe that that election was rigged or stolen, at least in several states, I don't know what to tell you. I don't even want to argue it anymore. It's very clear what happened. But at any rate, if they get those things done, the pollsters that are dialed in for decades to the way U.S. electoral politics normally plays out, well, they'll be offside. And maybe we'll see that this time around. Maybe we'll see that in 26. But there's a lot of good news. And the Democrats, they just look terrible. And probably the worst thing was Irina, the poor woman that was stabbed to death on a subway. Everybody knows who I'm talking about. I don't need to parse it anymore. Her mom was there. And she was pointed out by the administration in her grief and by Trump during the speech. And the Democrats just sat there. They didn't stand up. They didn't give her any respect. They just sat there. And it was so classless. To add on top of that, the yelling and the heckling and the carrying on and the antics. There are a bunch of children. If the Americans elect that gong show of a party, I don't know what else to say. But, I mean, it doesn't matter if you like Trump. It doesn't matter if you're totally in love with the Republicans. The Democrats ain't it. You'd be further ahead to just stay home. So we talk about them yelling like assholes. We already talked about that. The SAVE Act. He told a story about transgenderism and how the parents of the person that he brought to the State of the Union, this person was there that he was talking about, how the parents were prevented from getting their kid back because they wouldn't agree to the gender change. Now, the way this started was, Sage was her name, by the way. Sage is her name, I should say. The transitioning process was going to be started without parental knowledge or approval, and they found out and they wouldn't go forward with it. And the kid was taken from the parents and then refused to go back. And it's like the horror shows that are normal in Canada, this was one of them. And here's Trump again on the highest platform the nation has talking about the story. Now, it turns out as time went by, Sage got over her dysphoria. And now she's a beautiful, healthy woman on the way to a successful, healthy life, which is exactly the kind of protection we should be offering children right here in Canada. I don't know why the CPC isn't championing this. I don't know why there isn't anybody in politics that are championing keeping children safe from mutilation and hormone so-called therapies and puberty blockers until they're adults. Most of them will get over this, but if you do irreversible damage to them before they complete puberty, they can't get over that. They're just damaged goods. Thousands of so-called detransitioners out there who are damaged for life, filled with resentment, and nobody cares about them, and they have no champion, at least officially, in Parliament. It was beautiful. It was beautiful to see. He turns to Democrats who refuse to applaud to Irina. We already talked about that. And he was just incredulous, as was I. Called them sick people for not standing and applauding record low crime. Like, these are all positive things. Also, the cutting of the drug supply. And you can see that it's not hyperbole, because you see the media say it's fake news. Drugs are still widely available. But the price of drugs on the streets going up, because there's websites you can go to, which will tell you the street value of just about any drug you want. There's a website for everything these days, folks. It will tell you the average price that you can pay for things in cities all across the United States and Canada, for that matter. The price of drugs is going up because the supply is going down. Violent crime is going down because he's kicking out the illegals, all the criminals that come from the jails. Again, they muttered and they booed when he talked about the fact that they spent years under Biden emptying their prisons and dumping people into the United States. That's the truth. And those people are getting rounded up and kicked out. That's also the truth. And you can see the truth of it in the crime statistics. So, at any rate, the other thing, and the only other thing I'm going to say about the State of the Union is, once again, my admiration for the American system and the strong heritage that they have. Fixed election dates, not floating around, not subject to Congress just deciding to dissolve the government. Everything is fixed and has a schedule. They have these traditions, time-honored traditions. They have 250 years of it. They have way better civil liberties than we have up here. The citizen is far more empowered in the United States. Whether they choose to exercise it or not, that's on them. There's a lot more tools for a citizen to be effective. They have jury nullification. They have all these beautiful things that I've highlighted in my video or my video work before. And it's just, I actually swell with pride every time one of these assemblies happens. We don't really have the equivalent up here. We have a throne speech, which is just, it catches in my throat and makes me a little sick to my stomach. A speech to the throne. We're still talking to the king. We missed an opportunity 100, 200 years ago to get away from the British monarchy, and I lament that on a daily basis. I want to move on to this. Here's a scenario. United States and Israel bomb Iran. All out for a week, 600 sorties a day, and then targeted for 2 weeks. I've been talking about the munitions thinness and how advanced weapons stockpiles could be depleted in such a way that if Iran can just survive, just like they did in the 12-day war, if they can just survive for a couple weeks, they will have the ability to hit both U.S. assets and Israeli assets. And you can say that that's fake news all you want. No one really knows exactly what they have, but we do know they've had months of Chinese planes landing to resupply and supply Iran with new toys. We don't know what's coming next if the United States decides to hit them. But at any rate, the Americans and the Israelis get in a war and they expend their thin munition stocks. And with all eyes on Iran, China exploits the opening to take Taiwan in perfect march conditions. It would be a fait accompli. This is not the first time I've discussed the creation and opening of a strategic opportunity for China to move on Taiwan. I also think that there's a possibility of an unspoken quid pro quo, because the United States is trying to onshore or reshore the manufacturing that they have become dependent on that comes from Taiwan, and trying to attract their talent to the United States with offers of work and pathways to citizenship and all of this other stuff. There's a timeline there, because Taiwan is Chinese for all intents and purposes. That's why the world has always been hesitant to recognize Taiwan. And I know it sucks if you're living in Taiwan and you happen to be hearing these words, but it's the reality of the world. In a multipolar world, there's no way that the world can move on, that we can move through this reorganization of hemispheres without a recognition that Taiwan is Chinese territories. Now, if there's a war where U.S. forces are distracted, where munition stockpiles are thin, there's very little that anybody can do if China decides to seize that opportunity. Now, it was said in the comment section by somebody, I don't remember who, but credit to you, who said that China is a very conservative society and they wouldn't do that. But even conservative societies make bold moves. And if China is going to, you better believe that if China intends to really announce their position as a global power that doesn't bow to a hegemon, they're going to have to make a bold move at some point. They have spent time and treasure. They've organized manpower in their society. Someone else said that the Chinese would run out of fuel because if the Strait of Hormuz is closed, it doesn't even have to be closed. People are going to avoid sending ships up there. There's going to be some kind of reduction in the flow of oil. They won't go ahead because it'll be too damaging to their country. And I mean, if you look at Chinese strategic petroleum stockpiles, they are more than ready. They got something like 150 days in supply. And that's if they don't ration their civilian population. So they can do this. They can do this if there's the right opportunity. And that's one of my concerns, is that if you focus everything in the Middle East and it doesn't go perfect and it's not over quick, then China has an opportunity. And maybe there is a quid pro quo. I don't know. I'm not privy to the conversations that go on. But I do know that the Olympics are done. The State of the Union is over. Trump didn't have much to say about Iran that he hasn't already said before. There are talks this week. I think, once again, it's a setup that if there's going to be a strike on Iran, it'll happen over the weekend when markets are closed. That seems to be the move these days. Can't even argue with it. If you're going to do something, you do it on the weekend. And there is a chance that it could still be coordinated because the United States has organized a lot of force there. And there's a chance that there could be that choreographed warfare that we've been used to since the assassination of Soleimani. Everybody telling everybody else where they're going to hit and what they're going to do. That's a possibility, I suppose. But I think, in my approximation, I think we're moving away from that. But we shall see, and I hope it doesn't go down that way. But I want to highlight for a minute this MA Welcome to the Rock guy. No wonder people call you a grifter coward. 4 hours ago, almost word for word, could it hurt or grift to credit someone else once in a while? Loser. The grifter label is one of my primary motivators for doing things the way that I do them. Simply having a donate link. I give you everything. There's no memberships. There's no paywalls. I don't want to be seen as another Maxim Bernier promising you miracles while never building anything that's going to give you a miracle. I don't promise you anything. I don't even promise you the next video. You get nothing. You've already got it all. That's why I do things this way. If this bothers me, and I suppose by putting this out there, other people will do it. Eventually, I'll just get numb to it, but it bugs me. But the fact is, I don't even remember this guy's response. And he says, the CCP are behind this, first of all. Second of all, when the U.S. runs out of ammunition, the CCP will initiate its attack on Taiwan. March is the perfect month for the CCP. I didn't even cover that. Did I say that in my tweet? Did I say March was? Yeah, I did. The point is, without getting into it, my tweet is very different from what he says. And it's not the first time I've talked about this. I talked about this during the 12-day war, and I've talked about it before. That they are looking for an opportunity to take Taiwan. And March just happens to be an ideal setup for weather conditions. And if the United States is distracted, they might take it. I've discussed all this before. For all I know, this guy stole my idea. But I'll guarantee you that neither I, nor this guy, whoever he is, I'll guarantee you that we're not the first people to think of this. We're all just discussing ideas. Nobody owns them. And the other thing I just want to point out, if you go to this guy's profile, his top concern is his follower count. This guy is getting triggered by the numbers on the screens and the lack of engagement. He's always whining about that. Don't be like this dude. I keep running into this where it's people who follow me and engage with the content. We've been getting along. I don't know if it's this guy, but other people. You're getting along for years. You like each other's stuff. You talk, whatever. And then you have one disagreement and they turn on you viscerally. They start calling you every name in the book. They accuse you of all the things that they said you weren't before. And it's all because of some kind of envy or jealousy. Don't be like that. I do want to stick with the theme of the United States today, since we have been reviewing the State of the Union and the implications of an impending bombing campaign in Iran. Let's just talk a little bit more about what's happening in Mexico. Elon Musk came out and he accused Sheinbaum of being linked to the cartels. Fact is, she is. She's more or less admitted that the cartels run Mexico. And the Americans have put her in between a rock and a hard place. where she either takes action against the cartels and accepts that risk, or the Americans will come in and do it for her, which she does not want. And so some action has been taken. But there's more going on here than just drugs and cartels. There's also something very critical. Now, this happened before what happened in Puerto Vallarta. This article came out. Local management had dealings with armed group before kidnapping a Canadian mine company, says ex-workers. 5 of 10 kidnapped Vizsla Silver workers for Mexican mining project were killed, say authorities. Canadian mining firm, this is BBC, says it's abducted workers found dead in Mexico. It's interesting that this hit the press before the cartel incursion occurred, or the cartel incident occurred. Venezuela has very deep silver stockpiles in the ground. They're also the world's leading silver producer. They do depend on China for a lot of the refining, but not all of it. And the United States, this modern military, with the thin munition stockpile that I've been talking about, is very dependent on silver. They get some of it from Canada, they produce some of it themselves, but they also import it. And that's just for the strategic uses. The COMEX, which is basically represents the entire silver market, depends on imports to keep its stockpile sufficient to everybody's needs, industrial producers, traders, ETFs, individual large investors, small investors, even if you want to call them small at 1,000-ounce lots. The fact is that silver's not moving because of this event. And underneath all of this is a very real concern about silver supplies, because for the last 7 years, if you include the ETFs, 5 years if you only look at the industrials, the world is in a perpetual silver deficit. We are consuming more than we can mine, and we're running through grandma's silverware as it crowds into refineries to sell at these elevated prices, because we're at all-time highs. We're in price discovery right now. I don't think that's done yet. Silver hasn't been inflation adjusted in 50 years. Demand has never been so high. The price does not reflect that yet. The price is still reflective of paper, both paper shorts and paper longs. And we're still working through all of that to create a new price structure in a brand new silver market, one that's more closely tied to physical silver. Inventories at COMEX are coming down, and March is a very heavy delivery month. We're getting very close. And there's a very real possibility that they will just run out of silver, will have to declare force majeure, and they'll start paying people out in cash that they don't want. And there could be a very real silver crisis. Now, this cartel stuff, this is making it so silver cannot be transported in Mexico. There's been the companies in Mexico, just to give you a bit of a general background, tended to export silver in its refined state into the United States and elsewhere. And they've had to stop doing that. Sometimes they just ship raw ore because cartels are heisting and stealing that silver. And now that you have inflated prices, and prices tend to just, I would say, are going to tend upwards for a very long time. We're talking years. Well into the 2030s, I don't think you see silver get cheaper. You might have dips and ups and downs, and that's pretty normal. It's still a very volatile market because there's a lot of paper control still being exercised. But things are changing, and as it becomes worth more, particularly the physical product, there's going to be more incentive for people to steal it, because you can't really tell where the silver comes from. You can steal it just like gold, and you can melt it down and turn it into something else, and that's it. It's washed. It's rinsed. That's the beauty of precious metals if you're a criminally minded person. And there's no third party risk if you're not a criminally minded person and you're just looking to preserve the value of your purchasing power. At any rate, exports from Mexico are at least temporarily halted right now. There's a big supply chain disruption as we come into a huge delivery month in March, and the COMEX supplies are already being drained. They've been being drained on a steady basis for months and months now. Now it's sub 100 million ounces, and there's something like 300 million ounces in claims against that. I think it's 88 million ounces the last time I checked. Silver is just as strategic maybe more so now in the world that we live in, than oil. It's one of the principal strategic resources. It is undervalued. There are supply problems. When the Chinese said that you have to have special export licenses to ship out pure industrial, like we're talking 99.9% pure, which is what you need for industrial. It's also what you need for bullion and investment people. You can buy so-called junk silver. You can buy 90%. But the real stuff is the pure silver. And China has the most refining capacity of anywhere in the world. A lot of silver production, raw production, gets refined as far as doré bars, and they go to China to get refined up to pure, and then they get shipped back out. And they're now saying that they're going to tightly control that, and only the people that the government approves are going to be able to get that refined silver that they need to make the electric cars, that they need to make your computers and your AI tech and all the weapons of war that the United States likes to deploy, these very high-tech weapons. There's a big shakeup in this very strategic resource at a time when it is trying to find its true and genuine price. And enter into that mix what's happening with this, just the beginning of cartel warfare in Mexico, because the Trump administration... The Trump administration, I said I was going to try and keep this quick, and I think I've already failed. The Trump administration is desperately trying to do a lot of things at the same time. They're trying to clean up a lot of messes. You've got cleaning up the elections, cleaning up the illegals, trying to clean up fraud in the United States within the system to see if they can figure out how to plug the deficit. They're trying to reorganize how they get revenue, converting it back to tariffs, because, you know, people say, tariffs are just a tax on the American people. And in a way, they're right, but it's just an incomplete thought process. The idea that Trump is espousing, which he's actually, I didn't even make a note of it, but I'm just remembering now, he talked about replacing income taxes, federal income taxes, with tariff revenue. So as an American worker, you wouldn't pay any federal income tax. Well, that's pretty amazing. But people will say, oh, you're just going to have to pay it when it comes to these tariffs, so you're going to end up paying it anyway. By choice. You don't have to buy anything. You can just preserve your value. It's not like the government's there with a gun, taking it before you can even touch it. You get your money, and then you get to choose if you want to buy a tariff product or not. And the beautiful thing is, if you start making the stuff back home, so you bring manufacturing back, that manufacturing in America is tariff-free. It's just a reorganization of thinking, and this is what they're trying to do. And that's just one of the things they're trying to do. They're also trying to realign the geopolitical chessboard. I mean, I believe the Trump administration was very genuine coming into office about ending the Ukraine war. I don't know why they don't just end their involvement flat. And tomorrow we got to talk about what Canada just did, but I'm trying to keep this short. I don't know why they're not doing that. I'm assuming there's reasons for that. I don't see how a war in Iran would help things right now. I've said that in my videos. I'm not changing my mind on that. But I fully understand this reorganizing principle, putting Europe in their place as they try to start World War III and saying, no, this is not going to happen. The tail is not going to wag the dog. America's the dog. You're going to listen. You're going to reorganize yourself. And while we're at it, we're going to try and kick the city of London out of their arrangements in Latin America as well as China. Like, there's a lot going on in a very short amount of time. And at any rate, one of those things is the elevation of silver and the recognition that it's actually far more valuable. And it's been taken for granted. Silver has been taken for granted, largely because the market's been dominated by paper pushers. It's been dominated by the derivatives game that emanates from Europe and the city of London. Of course, it's infected the Federal Reserve and it's infected American finance, but this administration is trying to change that. And it's been in this false price range for 50 plus years. You can go back even further if you want. No one alive actually understands the value of silver, and we're in a new paradigm in terms of its necessity as a strategic resource. So this is just another thing that underlies what's happening in Latin America, Venezuela, Mexico. Silver. At any rate, I'm Frank Vaughn. I failed to keep it short, but that's just the way it is. If you like my work, please consider supporting it via the website. This grifting bastard has a donate link. And you can use it if you want, but if you don't, guess what? You get me for free, as long as I can afford to provide it to you for free. And thanks to everybody. All the views, all the likes, all the shares, because we're not monetized. We're not getting help from YouTube. The only way we grow is if people organically find it brand new. It's a miracle we have 63 or 64,000 people between Twitter and YouTube following us as it is. You guys built that, and I appreciate it. I'll see you in the next one.